Hannah can hear the voices in the English patient's room and stands in the hall trying to catch what they are saying. When she enters, she sees Kippen, the English patient, passing a can of condensed milk back and forth. The Englishman sucks at the can, then moves the tin away from his face to chew the thick fluid. "We have discovered a shared pleasure, the boy and I. For me on my journeys in Egypt, for him in India." Hannah glances back and forth between the two of them. Kip peers into the can. "I'll get another," he says, and leaves the room. Hannah looks at the man in the bed. "Kip and I are both international bastards, born in one place and choosing to live elsewhere, fighting to get back to or get away from our homelands all our lives, though Kip doesn't recognize that yet. That's why we get on so well together." In the kitchen, Kip stabs two holes into the new can of condensed milk with his bayonet and runs back upstairs to the bedroom. "You must have been raised elsewhere," the sapper says. "The English don't suck it out that way." "For some years I lived in the desert," the English patient says. "I learned everything I knew there. Everything that ever happened to me that was important happened in the desert." He smiles at Hannah. "One feeds me morphine, one feeds me condensed milk. We may have discovered a balanced diet." He turns back to Kip. "How long have you been a sapper?"
5 years, mostly in London, then Italy, with the unexploded bomb units.
"Who was your teacher?"
"An Englishman in Woolwich."
"Well, that must have been Lord Suffolk. Did you meet Miss Morden?"
"Yes."
At no point does either of them attempt to make Hannah comfortable in their conversation. But she wants to know about his teacher and how he would describe him. "What was he like, Kip?"
"He worked in scientific research. He was head of an experimental unit. Miss Morden, his secretary, was always with him, and his chauffeur, Mr. Fred Hartz. Miss Morden would take notes, which he dictated as he worked on a bomb, while Mr. Hartz helped with the instruments. He was a brilliant man. They were called the Holy Trinity. They were blown up, all three of them, in 1941 at Erith."
Hannah looks at the sapper leaning against the wall. No expression of sadness, nothing to interpret. Some men had unwound their last knot of life in her arms. In the town of Anghiari, she had lifted live men to discover they were already being consumed by worms. In Ortona, she had held cigarettes to the mouth of the boy with no arms. Nothing had stopped her. She had continued in her duties while she secretly pulled her personal self back. So many nurses had turned into emotionally disturbed handmaidens of the war, in their yellow and crimson uniforms with burn buttons. She watches Kip lean his head back against the wall and knows the neutral look on his face. She can read it. At 4 in the afternoon, they had lowered Kip into the pit in a harness until he was waist deep in the muddy water, his body draped around the body of the Esau bomb. The casing, from fin to tip, 10 feet high, its nose sunk into the mud by his feet. Beneath the brown water, his thighs braced the metal casing, much the way he had seen soldiers holding women in the corner of the Nafi dance halls. The sappers had dug the pit around the Esau and set up the wood shaft walls before he had arrived on the site. In 1941, Esau bombs with a new Y fuse had started coming in. This was his second one. It was decided during planning sessions that the only way around the new fuse was to immunize it. It was a large bomb in ostrich posture. He had come down barefoot, and he was already sinking slowly, being caught within the clay, unable to get a firm hold down there in the cold water. He laid his left cheek against the metal casing, trying to think himself into warmth, concentrating on the small touch of sun that reached down into the 20-foot pit and fell on the back of his neck. What he embraced could explode at any moment. There was no magic or X-ray that would tell anyone when some small capsule broke, when some wire would stop wavering. What town was he in? He couldn't even remember. He heard a voice and looked up. Hardy passed the equipment down in a satchel at the end of a rope, and it hung there while Kip began to insert the various clips and tools into the many pockets of his tunic. He wiped the area of Fuse Head dry and began moulding a clay cup around it. Then he unstopped the jar and poured the liquid oxygen into the cup. He taped the cup securely onto the metal. Now he had to wait again. There was so little space between him and the bomb, he could feel the change in temperature already. If he were on dry land, he could walk away and be back in 10 minutes. Now he had to stand there beside the bomb. They were two suspicious creatures in an enclosed space.